Monday Mornings with Matt and Kevin.
Here are your hosts, Matt and Kevin.
Wow, what a happy morning to y'all. You little Irish.
Hello.
I can't even think of the name of it. What are the little green guys?
Leprechauns.
Like, geez. Man, it's St. Patrick's Day. I can't even think of it. I know everyone's listening to this on the day after St. Patrick's Day, but we're recording on St. Patrick's Day. I am drinking a beer. It's a German beer, but I am cooking. I'm cooking right now, literally as we speak. We were postponed because I was frying up bacon to put into our Guinness stew. So pretty good. I'm pretty excited about it. It's pretty darn dark. It tastes like beer. I think my wife's going to hate it, but I'm going to enjoy every second of it. So sorry to my wife about the Guinness stew, but it's pretty amazing. I'm a fan. I don't think she's going to be a fan, but I'm a fan, and that's in honor of maybe not St. Patrick, but in honor of Ireland. It's also why I'm drinking a beer, I suppose. So, Matt, it's good to be back with you. It's been a couple of weeks since we've had a show together, so it's always nice to have a chat with you and see how things are going. And today we got a couple of interesting topics. I guess apparently we're mushrooms, which I take as a high compliment. Thank you, Bergoglio. We're also going to talk about quotes from Pius VI, and also, you know, we're going to brush up on the Catholic or recent Catholic history in Ireland, in honor of St. Patrick's Day, which is very fascinating and even more tragic. Things to pray for, guys. Everyone needs to pray for it. But before we get going, I do want to do a couple of shout outs. I actually recorded a video to publish on its own and then deleted it because, well, I'm a bit of an idiot. But please, everyone, go out and check out today Crusader Filmworks. That's good friends of the show. That is Eliza and Andrew Kiernan. They've been on the show a couple times, and they've got some really good stuff over there. And they published a video that at my request, like I said, hey, guys, I really would love it if you could do a video for St. Patrick's Day called Our Lady of Knock. It's beautiful. She has just a wonderful voice. She's a wonderful talent, and he's really good at putting together videos. So they're really, really a great combination of talents, and the video just gave me chills. Matt, you got to check it out after we're done here. I don't know if you've seen it already. It's really wonderful. It's really a great, beautiful video that will inspire you and really, I truly think, help you to love Mary because it's about Our Lady. So please check it out, Crusader Filmworks. I will really try to remember to attach that link in the podcast. I know I promise that all the time and I never do it. I'll try to do my best, but Crusader Filmworks. Also, a big thank you to Father Timothy Geckel, who has recorded the Goodyear Passion the last couple of weeks. He spent hours and hours and hours recording it, and it's wonderful. It's amazing. It's such high quality. He's an amazing reader. The editing is also very good. It sounds good, and the quality of the book, of course, is also exceptional. So if anyone's struggling through Lent, if you want to get a little bit of a pick-me-up, if you want to really hit these last 2 weeks hard and really, really feel it at the end and really think that you've had a nice Lent, you've earned your Easter, I suppose. Go check this out. I'm not just plugging our podcast. Seriously, at this point, the views, I seriously don't care. The podcast is exceptional. This Goodyear Passion, it's every day. Father has recorded 15 or 20 minutes every day from a busy priest. So please, he obviously thinks it's worth it. I think it's worth it. Go check it out. It's so good. And it will definitely give you that extra edge for the rest of Lent. Matt, I'm sorry for that insanely long introduction. How are you doing?
No, that was great. That was quite soothing and relaxing to listen to. Really, really, really great opening. The show with Eliza was excellent. And
thank
people
you. Yeah,
need to listen to it. I really, really enjoyed that. I did not finish. I'll finish on my drive. But just her knowledge of
totally
music and the influence, like it, that was very well done. So I like that. People should listen to that.
Well, that was another one real quick. Sorry, but it was like, I would say a song. I'm like, oh, yeah, what about this song? And she'd like give the composer and the composer's
personal life. I was just going to say her knowledge was
it was amazing. Incredible. So no, totally. You're absolutely right. And the podcast that Matt's talking about is the, what was it called? The effect of
music, I believe.
Music on society, on civilization. It's really, really, really good. She did a great job. And again, she's really a wonderful talent, which we need to appreciate, man. I know we didn't plan that type of a show, but I mean,
no, sure.
When you have a talent, when we see a talent, and especially if it's a talent that's glorifying God, we gotta not be so shy. I mean, we have to go out and say, hey, look, I have this, or I know someone who does, and let's bring it to the world because God gave it to us. I think that's it's something that and then Catholics oftentimes take this, you know, in the Bible, say, you know, meek and humble of heart. Meekness doesn't mean to be a little, you know, church mouse who never talks, you know, who squeaks, you know, oh yeah, I'm just this little innocent little, no.
Like St. Patrick. Out.
Yeah, exactly. St. Patrick. Matt, that's a perfect way to segue into St. Patrick. Go ahead.
But a great proselytizer. He would have been, he would have been so bad that Bergoglio would have put him on some list.
on called Epstein him a Island mushroom.
Yes, he would have called him a mushroom. Yep. That's actually, let me kind of start there first because it's brief, and then I'll go a little bit into Ireland.
A mushroom.
What a
rigid mushroom. A rigid mushroom stuck in that
lace. When I saw that quote, Kev, about Francis calling us mushrooms, first I thought it was fake, because first I thought to myself, why would he use the word instead of acanthus?
Yeah,
because right. He actually used that actual word.
First time I've ever seen.
And then I don't know if I've ever heard any of the post-Vatican claimants use that term. And second, to compare to I guess my question would be is, what does that mean? What does it mean to be a I don't even know. Do you have any idea or any thoughts? Why would he think they're nothing but mushrooms? Maybe it's an expression in like Spanish that I don't know what that would even be in reference to. But anyway,
which I knew.
For someone who is so much about, you know, religious dialogue and accompaniment and gazes and all of these things, it kind of makes me wonder why he would say that he feels sorry for us and sad for us. And then, I kind of put two and two together and really compiled just a memory bank of his quotes saying things, you know, like they're all stiff in their cassocks. Remember that one? Mm-hmm. Those weird, these are actual quotes, by the way, these weird hats in the shape of Saturn that they all wear on their heads as they don grandmother's lace. Like, these are things that he actually said. Great. To tie that all together with the sin of going backwards, something that he said was actually sinful. So I guess that's why he feels sorry for us. He feels that we're those rigid triumphalists or whatever that he doesn't see as, like, you know, being joyful and happy and enjoying life. And that would be my interpretation of it. But I just found it odd that, you know, someone who is just so much about accompaniment and gazes and caresses and all of these things, what has he said? No walls, no isolation. Well, he has been very, very unfriendly to many of us, and he feels sorry for us. So, maybe we can turn it into chicken marsala, Kev. Maybe we can make a nice dish out of it. Yeah, some mushrooms on top of chicken.
I'm a fan. Well, when I wonder, Matt, I mean, you know, as you said, I think you made a really good point that no one's ever said that word before, I think. And I think it's a really big deal. I think it's a big deal. I mean, if you're looking at maybe not Susan from the council, you know, the parish council, but maybe Susan's daughter, you know, or whatever, her cousin who is following, you know, Francis's, you know, Twitter account, they're going to say, what? Wait, say they what? Say they be
right, on to, right.
They don't know, Matt. I mean, most people aren't on Twitter and having arguments with Father Desposito. That's just not how it is. I mean, some people are, and they're better for it. They are. I mean, they're going to lose that argument, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, that, you know, but the point is, most people don't even know what that word means. So I was curious. I just Googled the word sede vacantes. And now, don't get me wrong, guys, I understand how Google works. They know what I've searched before and stuff. But I don't think I've ever searched that word. So I'd actually be really curious if everyone out there listening, go and Google sede vacantes. Just the word. Tell me what comes up. I'd be curious. Tell me in the comment section. Because first of all, it's Wikipedia. Second of all, it's where Peter is. Oh, boy. That's not great. I haven't read that yet. Third is CMRI.org. And fourth is what is sede vacantes on Reddit. So I highly recommend anyone who is listening to this, go to the CMRI.org answer. I think you're probably going to find that the most fair and honest answer, but pretty interesting. So Encyclopedia, where Peter is, CMRI, and then Reddit. Purely, literally on the cuff. Pretty interesting, man. But again, he is our biggest aid in bringing in people to the true faith. Thank you, Bergoglio. Seriously, and I really mean that, like, from my heart. I think very sincerely he is on the path to hell, and he does that with what he says. He is leading souls to hell. I'm not saying he's going to hell. I'm not saying that. I don't know. Only God knows when he's there or not. But he's on that path. I think we can say that pretty clearly. But, well, you know, saying things like this is helping out souls. So thank you.
So many people have no idea what that term even is. You're right. So people are going to be like, what is he even talking about? And then the mushroom comment is even funnier to throw that in there. There's a little thing on Twitter where people are putting the little emoji mushrooms next to their name. I haven't done it yet, and I don't think I want to do it, and I won't do it, but it's become like a little joke on X, or whatever we're supposed to call that website now. But yeah, that term, I remember when I first heard it, however long ago now, it must have been thrown up in conversation years, I mean, over a decade ago, I would think, and I thought it was another religion or something strange. I had no idea. So he is really a great, and I, you mentioned his eternal judgment. I feel like he doesn't have much time left, honestly. I just had some, you know, just thinking about it lately, and I just have this inclination that you know, he's taken a lot of hospital visits, a lot of things have been canceled. I think there's just going to be a point where we wake up on the news and see that he is kind of like Queen Elizabeth. It was very quick with her. Like I remember waking up one morning with her and it just said, the Queen's health has taken a serious turn. And I believe she passed that day. It wasn't even spoken of the day before. So I kind of have a feeling that, he doesn't have much time left, and we will be having a new successor of who knows what mold, will come, but he has planted all of these men in the electorate, I guess you could say. And his successor, I would assume, would be even, quote, I guess you want to call it worse, even more liberal and more progressive than he is. I think he is just a stepping stone. And he even said, too, I'm just starting to, or Vatican II hasn't been fully implemented yet, but I'm doing a lot of the work, or something along those lines. And he knows that his predecessor is going to do even more. So wonderful advertisements. And I guess this would be kind of a good way to segue into true Catholicism and looking back to Ireland and some numbers that we had there and some stats that we had there, Kev. I, you know, a quick little story with this first is I remember years ago now, before I really cared much about the faith, kind of laughing at St. Patrick's Day, because to me it was just cultural, which is our society mostly thinks it is. And when immigrants were coming to this country, the Irish typically settled up north in the tri-state area here near Boston, and the Italians settled more south near New York. And so being Italian or whatever, it was pretty common that you were told that you really don't mix with the Irish. They are up north. They kind of, you know, they are their own different ethnicity here or whatever, and you don't mix. And same with the Irish. They kind of kept their distance from Italians. And I think I told this story before. Even when some of my parents were growing up, they lived in some of those midway points, and it was kind of pretty clear, like, you stay on the Italian side, like, you don't mix with them. They're the Irish. And for whatever reasons, I don't know, but that was kind of the thing. So growing up, I thought, you know, like, wow, like, those Irish are going to celebrate. I used to say, I'm going to have spaghetti on St. Patrick's Day just to rub it in their face. That used to kind of be my little poke, these, you know, Italians, at them. And brutal are we. And it was only, you know, maybe a handful of years ago back when I started to really take the life and the proselytism of St. Patrick seriously, and just how much it was just, almost, it was very touching. It was very beautiful. And you see a great story that I came across too, is that when St. Patrick arrived in Ireland and he was meeting with the kings and the court and all of that and attempting to convert them, they gave him a poisoned drink at dinner. And it's in one of the books about him. And they put a poisonous drink in front of him, and he blessed it with the sign of the cross, and the glass exploded, and the poison kind of seeped out or whatever. And it is said that he converted over 100,000 people to Catholicism and led them all to baptism. So, of course, that's absolutely a superb proselytizer. But really, the faith...
Well, then he's an enemy of
Bergoglio. He's an enemy, right. Yeah. Bergoglio did say that proselytism is a sin. Mushroom. It's evil. It's the worst. Yeah, he's a mushroom just popping out of the ground. But, Kev, listen to some of these numbers. So I dug through a little bit this morning. This was put out by Cambridge University. It said that there was once a time, now I don't have a date on this, but there was once a time that Ireland had more religious, 15,323, than those in civil service and government, 14,695. There were more priests and nuns than there were those devoted to government life. I mean, that in and of itself is very, very telling. The church once ran nearly all of Ireland's schools, and a very high point here, during the reign of Pope Pius IX, right after one of the famines that hit the area. nearly 95% of Ireland's population attended Sunday Mass. Wow. Now, you look back here, there is a quote by a sociologist who once commented, to be a good Irish person was to be a good Catholic. And that those two, and that's the end of the quote, but that those two were intertwined with one another. If you wish to be a good Irishman, you need to be a good Catholic. They were inseparable. To be Catholic is to be Irish. And it said there was once a time as well where in many countries they would have, you know, posters of their dictators or whoever ran their heart. Almost all Irish homes had a painting of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, which was mass produced in the country and distributed to all of the houses there. So it was almost impossible to go into an Irish house at some point and not see an image of the Sacred Heart on the walls. And that has taken, obviously, a tremendous dip post-council. I wonder why.
But it's amazing because it shows you, you know, it's kind of like the Japanese in a way, right? I mean, when you're oppressed, you're not, in this case, not by the government, by the English government, really, and you're suffering and you're being tortured, really, and starved to death, where do you go to? You know, you go to God, you know, when you're struggling and suffering. And that's, it's a hard reality that we have to face, is that, you know, when we're comfortable in life, we're almost always farther from God. That's just the truth of it. That's for individual people. Yeah. That's for, you know, in general, you know, that society. And you see it right now where we're getting a little away from being comfortable. I think you're starting to see people start to suffer a little bit, at least, you know, if you're watching TikTok and people complaining about, you know, not being able to pay their bills. And part of it is because of, you know, mistakes they've made, et cetera. But I mean, eventually you're going to reach a point where, you know, I've asked this myself, you know, is it better to have a war? Because in the end, Matt, right? I mean, I have a couple of kids, you know, another mm-hmm. one on the way, and I don't want them to suffer. I don't want them to see war.
Sure.
But what is our primary goal on earth? You know, I mean, for everyone, for the entire population, for Bergoglio, we want everyone to go to heaven. So if that's the case, do we want an easy life or do we want famine and war to save souls? And I'm not saying want. That's the wrong word. But you see what I mean, Matt? That you see when life gets too easy, then you start to have this craziness like you see in Ireland right now, which I think you're going to talk about next, because when you go from the extreme of suffering and death and, hey, I might live only another year, so I'm going to spend all of my time at the church or praying to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And then you go to, oh, well, we actually have life pretty good, so let's elect a gay transgender president. You know, I don't know if that's exactly what it is, but I think he's gay. So I mean, you know, yeah, that's where we are, you know. And so, okay, bring on famine, Matt. I know that's an extreme take, but bring it on.
Mm. And it you just see here too, and I found this, and it was actually, this is a fairly secular article, so it's not like it's written by any Catholic writer or whatever. It's just assessing from a third point of view, the fall of Ireland. And the writer here, he says, it really peaked, and he mentions too, because obviously we have our own interpretation of this, but he says there was a collapse after the 60s in the 60s. And he puts that decade, like, you know, And he even says here, when we hit around the year 2000, the Catholic, his opinion was that the church in Ireland had collapsed. They're looking at numbers, I guess, here. As of 2020, about 27% of Irishmen, women, whatever, attended Sunday Mass, down from they actually have record. It was 91% just a few decades ago. So we went from 91% to 27%. It says the amount of Irish people who call themselves Catholics is somewhere in the 60s, but most of them refer to them as themselves as cultural Catholics, which means they, quote here, they put up with the church's rites of passage, but they have little interest in any religious dogma or any of her humble traditions.
Matt.
And it says here, many
hear it.
Many, like the French, are de facto atheists. They describe themselves as having been, quote, born Catholic, but don't believe in a God or are unaware of him.
You know, Matt, it's really easy to be a Catholic, right? I mean, honestly, like, we have to be baptized and we have to follow the church's teachings and dogmas and doctrines. That's That's it. It's not that hard. I mean, it's hard to
reach. Or else you're outside.
It's hard to reach heaven, but it's easy to actually be a member of the Catholic Church. But if you don't believe in the dogmas of the church, you are not Catholic by the definition of being Catholic. That's correct. It. That's
and
the
Pius
end,
XII was clear.
It's extremely clear. That's not my opinion. Go look it up, people. If you deny a dogma of the faith, you are not a Catholic.
Right.
So it's just like, I mean, so how many Catholics do we actually have in Ireland? 10, Matt, 10 people. I mean, it's insane. And you see how the devil has worked in the countries that our Lord loved best. I mean, if that's the best way to say, you know, in these countries, you know, look at France. France just legalized it. No, they didn't just legalize. They put into their constitution the legality of abortion. That is the first daughter of the Catholic Church. And look at Ireland, Ireland, which is the island of the saints. This is the island that saved Europe, not just in terms of faith. They saved them in terms of culture, in terms of history. We would have no history of Europe if it weren't for the Irish monks, period. Right. They all call it the Dark Ages. Well, you know who made it better? The Irish monks. So y'all maybe want to go back and look at history and realize that if it weren't for your Catholic faith, the true Catholic faith, you wouldn't exist. The Vikings would have conquered, the Muslims would have conquered, etc. And it makes me ill that these stupid people think that they can just do away with it and not care. And well, okay, then Ireland will cease to exist. And well, we're seeing that right now. That's it.
Do you remember too, Ireland maybe a few years ago had that big abortion vote where abortion got passed? And do you remember all these people celebrating in the streets? They're having parades, they were taking to the streets. And I don't know if you saw the video. It's very troubling in France when she was, but she announced the votes of the abortion law, and you can just see like the glee in her face. You could see like she's trying not to smile as she makes this announcement.
How many of these people are possessed, Matt? I'm serious. I mean, how many have literally a devil inside them? I'm not kidding. I mean that's the creepiest, the craziest thing of our lives, our society. How many people are actually possessed by the devil because they willingly want the devil to be inside them? I mean, if you want to actually kill your child that you with God, you know, created and with a man or a woman or whatever, you know, whoever you are, you know, and if you did that and then you just willingly kill them, I mean, talk about the best possible way to welcome the devil into your soul. Come on.
And you think about it too, is all of these countries, and mentions this in the article too, and you see this in Europe, they say there is a remnant of old Catholicism. There's remnants of Catholicism here. You know, when you see, and he talks about this, you can travel through Ireland and it's not uncommon to see this very old statue of the Blessed Virgin just in the midst of hills, or these, you know, a crucifix just poised in the forest or whatever. Like it was so alive in these countries. Obviously the eldest daughter of the church, Catholic France, they were ingrained with one another. You couldn't have, just like how we said here with Ireland, you couldn't have these countries without Catholicism, and you couldn't have, they were together, and those remnants of the faith still live in these areas. And you know, you look back and you think of what once was and how troubling it really, really is. Like, if these are not the end, like, what does the end times look like? And then the thing is too, is who catapulted all of this in? The council did. And the thing is, we look at the men who promulgated the council throughout the entire world, and we call them saints. John the 23rd.
We don't, but
Paul the right, but right. But I know they have the title of they. I mean, that is awful.
No, you're right. Sorry. You know, and they create these things, you know, the theology of the body, and they promote, you know, condoms in Africa. These are facts, people. Go Google them. Go, you don't have to trust me. Go look them up. This is easily to find. They have promoted these things. Look at the theology of the body. Maybe not. Don't look that up, because it's disturbing. It's disgusting. And it is, you see, again, I just saw a stat on Facebook, and I have no idea if this is true. So you can Google this one and tell me I'm wrong. This might not be true, but I saw 48% of 48% of married people lived together before they got married. 47% of Catholics lived together before they got married. So it's 1% less. So Matt, hurrah, you know, to the Catholics, you know, that 1% of people who are actually not living in sin before getting married. This is what it is, man. I mean, we live in a world where it's all words. It's not actually actions. And I can speak for myself. I'm a sinner. It's not like I'm this perfect paragon of holiness. Of course not. But I mean, again, when you start to see these things where I say, well, yeah, we say we're Catholic in name, but we don't follow, you know, all of the dogmas of the church. What are you talking about? Then you're not a Catholic. Shut up and call yourself a stupid little atheist and go bury your head in a hole. I'm sorry. I mean, I can't deal with that. I mean, don't call yourself it if you're not actually practicing it. And
if
you're Novus Ordo and you're practicing it or trying, okay, that's at least something.
It was one of the Piuses, I forget which one, but he said the Catholic faith is either accepted or rejected as a whole. There's no parts of it. Mm-hmm. You either accept everything, right. Or if you deny even one aspect of it, one doctrine of it, you deny the whole thing. The whole thing is gone. There's the whole element, ecclesiology and partial and communion and all of that is a total mismatch of what the popes have taught and said throughout the however many centuries now. And what's crazy too is you would think that as this blunder happens in France and Ireland and all of that, that you would have a vicar of Christ who is raising his voice to condemn heresy and to condemn these things. And where is he? It's their silence.
Probably not talking promotion about the feelings of the forest, right? Probably
the cries
of
the wind. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Abortion, the murdering of innocent babies is being legalized around the world. And the quote unquote Pope is, oh, let's save the trees. Let's here, a little immigrant, I'll kiss your feet. Sorry, don't kiss my feet. I'll kiss your feet. It's a farce. It's a joke. Really, everyone, I hope people watching the show, most people, I think, again, are probably already there. But really, I just think about all of these things that are happening. St. Patrick, I heard a story about him one time, maybe from my mom's video. I don't remember. But he, when he, I don't, I'm okay, I'm trying to remember the story straight. I think even to avoid temptation, I don't think he was even having a temptation. To avoid temptation, he would go to the nearby river and stand in the river to his chest and put his arms out in the shape of a cross and pray. I don't remember Vespers or pray pray something. And so this was back in the 400s. So this was when prayer was probably a little bit more mental than not. But just imagine that, Matt. That was to avoid temptation. Talk about holiness. Why do you think he could convert 100,000 people? And you know, if you think about that, and okay, think about ourselves first. What are we doing? How am I doing? Am I going to stand in a river when I get a temptation? No, I should. Mm. I mean, hey, if I'm having a temptation, go stand in a cold shower. Probably a good idea. Whatever temptation it is, go and do it. And I think that these are things we can learn and see. And Matt, this is exactly, and I'm sure you would agree with me, that's how we get civilization back. That's how we get it back. If we actually want to win whatever this is we're doing, I'm not totally convinced it's the end of the world. I think it's probably, we're certainly in the abomination of desolation, but I think the time, all these ideas with God are very, they're very, you know, I don't know, they're not like we think of time.
So we haven't seen the signs that
exactly.
are here. Yeah, right.
I don't think there's an antichrist. I mean, it's not Donald Trump, guys, you know, calm down. And I think that, you know, I think we have time, and I think that we have to remember that if we want to save the world, well, we have to be St. Patrick. We do. I mean, even if, okay, you're not going to be a bishop, okay, fine. Go be a father and go stand in the river with your arms held out and sacrifice. It's not like so everyone can see it. And I think, again, Matt, we talked about this so many times in the show that it's like, that's not how this works. It's not so that, like, you know, I'm this great man that everyone can see, you know, watch me suffer. No. That's not it. There is a spiritual warfare. And you see, as you say, the glint in the eye of this woman saying, we're going to murder children. Yeah, look at my face. I'm going to laugh about it. It's satanic.
It's brutal.
It's from the devil.
It's ridiculous to watch. It's ridiculous to watch.
It is. It's evil. And then you see this in Ireland. As you said, I remember that maybe 5-10 years ago. I remember.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, abortion is legal. And the crowd goes wild. Well, yes. How are we, you know, and I think we just shake our heads and say, oh. Poor us, the world. Well, okay, you know, go stand in a river, pray the rosary. I got to do it too. I mean, it's not like I'm going to say this. I know it's easy to say rather than do, but I think that's the point. We have to go and sacrifice and pray.
And you think St. Paul, how he said, I bring my body into subjection, right? And all of these very, very, very holy men, it's interesting. These very holy men, St. Patrick, and again, I've mentioned him on the show before, but King Louis of St. Louis, King of France, these men who probably had very little difficulty with any sort of sin or temptation, subjected themselves greatly. They would stand in river. I forget, maybe it was St. Francis de Sales, but he would jump into prickery bushes, yeah. Thorn bushes. Right, right, right.
St. Francis of Assisi did it for sure.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So all of these saints who, again, it would probably be whatever sin they were tempted with at the time, we would probably maybe roll our eyes at it or brush it off. Like, that's not that may be venial at most. And they went to these great lengths to subject themselves and to not, you know, give heed to these temptations. And I mean, you really read through it. I have been going through this book on St. Patrick and his journeys and all of that, and a really good Catholic book. I could share it somehow on the site. But just like you see his zeal and you see his love of God, and he was sent. That's another thing too, is he was sent by the Pope. So we tie Bergoglio into this, but Pope, I believe it was Pope Celestine, had him. This was a mission, but St. Patrick wasn't like, I might as well just go and do this. He was sent by the church to proselytize, which is even funnier. And this problem is not unique to Francis either. John Paul II and Benedict had the same thing. There's no need for conversion. That, again, I brought this up. John Paul II said that the Jews do not wait in vain for their Messiah. That is blasphemy. To say that Christ did not come, they have their own Messiah who has not come yet. Their wait is not in vain. That's an actual quote. That is to deny Christ. And now you've had these popes who would send, you know, these men to Christian nations. I think of Columbus. I think of, you know, Juan Diego. You think of these men who had these missions to go and convert pagan lands. Yeah. Meanwhile, we have Pachamama worship going on in the Vatican.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's exactly it, Matt. I mean, exactly. You have pagans trying to convert Catholics. That's Bergoglio. I mean, someone tried to convince me that I'm wrong. Every show we've ever done practically has led to the fact that Bergoglio and probably half of the Vatican are pagans. They're not even atheists. They worship.
Right.
Atheism. They worship the earth or something.
There is some devil. Agree.
And Matt, that's a clear teaching of the church, that if you don't worship the true God, you worship demons. So, so Bergoglio is a demon worshiper. That's absolutely certain.
Pope Gregory. I believe it was Pope Gregory who said, true worship of God is only in the Catholic Church. You can't worship him in another religion or another faith. I mean, so these are things that we've seen such a shift, you know, of it was Mother Teresa. God loves all religions. All her book, which I used to have somewhere, said that all these faiths lead to this one God that is condemned staunchly by the voice of the magisterium. And for people to think that it's the same, I had someone tell me recently that that the Rome of today is the same Rome as the same faith of Rome as it's always been. Like, wow. So next week's Holy Week, Kev. Next week,
I'm ready.
Already,
and then my birthday, man. I was telling you that before. Everyone better wish me a happy birthday.
yes.
I'm very touchy that way.
March 25th.
March 25th. Yeah, it's a good day. Yeah. But we were talking about before the show. It's like
we were talking about this.
The Feast of the Annunciation, which is very nice.
Can Kevin have cake?
Yeah, can I have cake? That's the first question, the most important question. second question is, yeah, I mean, is it superseded by Holy Week, which I think Matt and I both agree it must be. So Holy Week supersedes it. So is the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, is it pushed off until after Easter? If there's a priest or someone listening to this, please let us know, because I'm actually pretty curious about that. I assume it probably just goes away until next year. I actually don't know. Good question. But it's a problem with having a late March birthday. It's like half of my birthdays, it feels like, are in Holy Week. It's like, well, yeah, I'm going to really have a big boomer birthday party during Holy Week. but it is the other side of it, of course, is that it is Holy Week is such a special week of the year. And it's such a week that it's like, there's no other time like it. I'm sure you would agree with me that you're this preparation, and you really start to feel it's like, okay, wow, you know, this is getting harder, and you're pushing yourself, and Holy Week's coming. You got Mass. We have it Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday in Germany, which is pretty hard. And so we do everything we can to, you know, to go to all those, you know, all those Masses, and they're long and it's difficult, but man, you get to Easter and it's like, this is what the faith is about, right? Christ suffered. It's hard. And
he the most important day of the year. Yeah.
Rose again, man. He rose again. And again, I think this is a really interesting topic. We probably talked about that for 20 minutes, but I mean, this, that whole idea, I think, cause Matt, you'd agree with me, you know, people, I heard someone, one of my guests had a risen Christ statue in the background. And, and one of the guests was like, or someone in the comments, why does he have a risen Christ statue? I was like, well, Christ did rise. I mean, the resurrection is and I understand if your faith is built around that and not the crucifix and not the suffering only, then yeah. Okay. But the risen Christ is that's the culmination of everything is Christ rising. So I think we get a little scared off by the Protestant, you know, the Christ is risen, you know, hallelujah. It's like, but he is risen. And that is the biggest feast. And that is the most glorious moment in human history. And will always be Christ rose from the dead and let us into heaven, you know, hopefully. And I think that we got to remember that too, not to get too shied away from this idea that the risen Christ is the most glorious Christ.
Hmm. It's an interesting point. Yeah. I mean, obviously as Catholics, we keep, you know, Christ is on the cross. I think it was Fulton Sheen who said Christ without his cross is a man without a mission. So obviously we remember that and we keep that. And we, that was the greatest moment in human history, truly, where, you know, Christ died for us. I mean, that is the,
when he rose was the biggest moment. I mean, it's not when he died.
Right, because he defeated, right, because death was defeated.
Right, because right. Then he rose, and that's when the gates of heaven were open. I mean, the gates of heaven were open not when he died on the cross. He went to hell, and he came back up, and the gates of heaven were open in the meantime. I mean, his rising is the glorious, you know, that's the glorious occasion of, exactly. The resurrection is the glorious occasion of Christ proving that, you know, he conquers all. The crucifixion is a necessary point of it, that he had to die for our sins, but that's like the most tragic point of it, because we're all a bunch of losers who you know,
right.
who put Christ to that. But the resurrection is when he proves that even though we've all sinned and we've all led him to this, he conquered and he will conquer. He will always conquer and his mother will conquer. And that's the beautiful thing. So I think there's this danger of getting a little too morose about it. It's only the crucifix. And I fully understand that is a huge part of it, but it's not everything. The risen Christ, the resurrected Christ is the greatest part of it. That's what a beautiful.
Right. Thing. That is our celebration, right?
It Easter is.
Sunday is our celebration.
What's the biggest feast of the year? Well, why is it, Matt, that the resurrection, the Easter Sunday is the biggest feast and not Good Friday? That's absolutely factual. I mean, the Easter Sunday is the biggest feast of the year. So that's because that's the biggest moment of all human history. And I think that we got to, I think it's just, it's so easy. I think especially traditional Catholics get into this, we mushrooms fall into this idea that, you know, it's all this woe is me and it's all, you know, oh, Christ just died on the cross. And again, definitely has its place, but he rose and he did. And
yes,
he let it all happen that we can go to heaven. That's a pretty cool. Pretty nice thing. That, I think it's one of the cool is the wrong word, but you know what I mean, Matt. Is that,
pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. But I think, I mean, Matt, this is actually the point I'm trying to make, that I think the Protestants, and I think Irish back in the day, to pull this full circle, had truly the understanding that Christ is our brother. You know, he actually does personally or should personally have a relationship with all of us. We should have a relationship with him. And again, we just, oh, that sounds so, no, we should. Christ died on the cross for all of us, every single person that will ever live. He died for each one of us. If it was for one person, we know that for sure. If it was for one person, he would have done it. It would have been worth it. And so that's something, again, I think we tend to forget. I think it's good to remember that's awesome. And I think the Catholics in Ireland, once upon a time, they lived their faith completely. And it's one of those things that they mentioned the saints all the time. You know, you look at their songs and their literature, that was just part of their life. They lived the faith. They like actually, and sometimes maybe a little too far. It pushed sacrilege, but it pushed sacrilege in our mind today, because back in the day, that was life. You know, I mean, God and Christ,
it was everything.
Mary
right,
and the
it
saints
was everything.
Was
your
everything.
Purpose was heaven.
That's it. Everything. Your whole life was based around heaven and Mary and the saints. And so if you said by the saints, you know, nowadays we think, okay, that's a curse. But no, it was just how they talked because their entire thought and world revolved around heaven.
There's a beautiful picture. It was it's pre-Vatican or around that time, actually, of an Irish family praying the rosary together after dinner one night. And there's a big family, you know, they bred like rabbits, as Bergoglio would say. And they were all kneeling down after dinner in one of their rooms. And, you know, there was no noise of television or music or stereo or whatever might have been the technology at the time. They had pictures of saints, and then they were kneeling and they were praying the rosary as a family together. And so, like you said, it was more than just like, all right, I guess it's 6 o'clock. It's time for our rosary. It was the routine of life. And that's what made so many of these people saints. And like you think, like how far we are today now from any of that at all, even myself, or, you know, you're reflecting, you're like, are we doing what they did? And what was their judgment like? You know, I don't think God's judgment changes. We're all held basically to the same standard, I guess, of, you know, preaching the faith and dying in a state of grace. But wow, we have a lot to go. And that's why the church gives us these penances too, you know, of Holy Week and really of Lent, to help us deny ourselves and to help us learn to subject our flesh to truths and to deny our passions and all that. The church kind of pre-sets us up with her sacraments and all the graces made available to us by her to be holy. We just have to cooperate with it.
Well, and keep your minds on the faith, you know, on in a good way. You know, I think you don't have to go whip yourself. Just go and read books of the saints and listen to beautiful music like Crusader, you know, Filmworks just made, you know, about Our Lady. I mean, that's what it's about. And I mean, just to have your mind on heaven. And I'm totally talking to myself. Man, how often do I think about heaven? Once a day? Maybe. You know, I mean, that is the truth. And so I think that's the key. You know, in hell too. I mean, hey, if heaven doesn't work, if you can't think about heaven, then think about hell. And that's the other way. You know, think about, do I want to go there? Okay, well, go read Our Lady of Fatima, or go read, you know, the other saints. You know, there are plenty who have plenty to say about hell. Go read it. And then if that scares you, okay, then do that.
If anyone wants, so Kev, for Holy Week here or whatever, The Four Last Things by St. Alphonsus Liguori is a crazy, crazy book that will make your hair stand up. Yeah, so you're giving the right sound effects. People should really look at that. You can find it online. You can find PDFs online. Yeah. Just read small sections of death, judgment, heaven, and hell. He writes very staunchly about it and has a lot to say too about the power of Our Lady, which our Protestant brethren will enjoy.
How dare you? Preparation for Death also by St. Alphonsus. So they're tough, but do it. Exactly as Matt said, that if there's anything that will prepare you to, to understand, I'm nothing, my life is nothing, and that's the point. That's exactly what it's about. That the point is, I am here just to go to heaven. And there you go. That's what we need. So no, definitely go to anything by St. Alphonsus is amazing. I mean, really, he really has so much about Our Lady and about everything that's important. So Matt, no, I really appreciate it. Did you want to talk about Pius VI or no? I guess
I think we're that's time. Good. Yeah. We'll save that. Time. Save the content.
I gotta go check my soup.
Your bacon.
My bacon's off the stove. It better be off the stove. Okay. It's in trouble.
Right. It'll be extra crispy.
And everyone, let us know in the comment section. What do you eat for St. Patrick's Day? What do you watch? We're also curious about that. We're gonna watch. We watched The Quiet Man with John Wayne. That's just a family tradition. You don't have to watch a movie, obviously, on St. Patrick's Day, but it's just kind of what we do. But if you do, if you read a book, whatever you do, let us know if you have any traditions for St. Patrick's Day, because I know that many, many, many Americans have a big, what's the word? You know, they're connected with Ireland. So
yeah. They celebrate it. Yeah
exactly. Quite so possible. So what do you cook? What do you watch? What do you read? What do you do any of that stuff? Because, I'm interested, because we're always looking for new traditions and stuff. And we have some pretty cool traditions for Holy Week, but maybe we'll save that for next week on Easter Monday, which would be published on my birthday. So Matt, we'll talk next week on my birthday, and Matt can send me a gift. So
post your Venmo in the comments.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. Exactly. I'll send address. You send a gift by now, I might get it by next Monday. No, everyone, seriously, thank you very much for watching. Well, hopefully Matt and I will be back next week. It's going to be pretty busy. I know Holy Week might be a little interesting after Easter. We'll see. Obviously, the podcast might get a little bit weird during Holy Week. Not weird, but I mean, come on.
Spotty.
I'm not going to be publishing too many podcasts during Holy Week. I hope you all appreciate that. We'll saw. I assume we're going to have Father Geckel's good year, which is, I just can't even understand how he's doing all this because he's amazing. Very good friend of mine, good friend of the show. So please. And again, I'm going to say that one more time before we end. Sorry, Matt. Please go check this out. Go check out the series. I know it's kind of late in the show, but it's just a very, very, very detailed version of the Passion. And Father Geckel is so good. He's so good at reading. He has a magnificent voice. And it's beautiful, and he spent so much time on it. So please go do that the last 2 weeks. I cannot recommend it enough. It is absolutely what you need for the next 2 weeks of Lent and to prepare for Holy Week. I can really say that. So please go do that. And in the meantime, like, share, subscribe, comment, all that stuff. Matt and I will hopefully be back next Monday, as long as no one's sick or running from the police.
Someone's, right.
You never know. maybe we're just turning to mushrooms full time. You never know.
That's right.
Fungi. At the Catholic Family Podcast. At the Catholic Family Fungi. Until next week, I'm Kevin. He's Matt. God bless.